So, this quality of heartfulness, and heartfulness is when we merge our mindfulness practice with heart qualities, such as gratitude or loving kindness, joy. And I'm going to read another poem, which I'm sure you've heard me read before, but for me, this is heartfulness. This is connecting with the heart in nature. And this is called The Little Duck by Donald Babcock. It was published in the New Yorker back in, I don't remember when exactly, 1947 or something. 1947. The Little Duck. Now we are ready to look at something pretty special. It's a duck riding the ocean 100 feet beyond the surf. No, it isn't a gull. A gull always has a raucous touch about him. This is some sort of duck, and he cuddles in the swells. He isn't cold, and he is thinking things over. There's a great heaving in the Atlantic, and he is a part of it. He looks a little like a mandarin, or the Lord Buddha, meditating under the bow tree. But he has hardly enough above the eyes to be a philosopher. He has poise, however, which is what philosophers must have. He can rest while the Atlantic heaves, because he rests in the Atlantic. Probably he doesn't know how large the ocean is, and neither do you. But he realizes it. And what does he do, I ask you? He sits down in it. He reposes in the immediate, as if it were infinity, which it is. That is religion, and the duck has it. He has made himself a part of the boundless by easing himself into it, just where it touches him. I like the little duck. He doesn't know much, but he has religion. So, I love that line. He has made himself a part of the boundless by easing himself into it just where it touches him. It's beautiful. You know, it's this quality really of space. Space perfectly accommodating everything. Space meeting everything exactly where it is. And this quality of space is a mental quality we can have. It's why I stress when you listen with practice and see with practice that you really tune into space. The spacious quality of mind is completely hospitable. It allows everything exactly as it is. The reason we're not space-like in our hearts, and space is the perfect marriage, by the way, of love and wisdom. I'll say more about that. When we're not spacious like this, it's because we're collapsed around the idea that we're separate. And this idea, this perception of our separateness, is the biggest illusion and our biggest source of suffering. And it comes about as a perceptual error because we don't have sensory clarity. Remember, in just a pure sensation, a throbbing, there's no me. The me comes from the sixth sense and the mind, creating an image if the throbbing is in the knee, an image of the knee, and the words, my knee. And that's relatively harmless, but it's everything we can then connect to once it's my knee. We connect to time, we connect to stress, we connect to separateness and to big stories. So the sensory clarity of just coming back to one of our five physical senses gives us a sense, you know, as we perfect it, as we deepen it, it actually helps us feel that we belong. It dissolves our separateness. And of course we're nature. How could we not be nature? Every breath we take, right? Our in-breath of oxygen is a plant's out-breath. Our out-breath of CO2 is a plant's in-breath. Every breath we take, we are communing. We are nature. And so, you know, the California forest fires and the Colorado fires, you know, if that isn't us being nature, we're just part of everything. So the aim of all practice is sensory clarity, dissolving our separateness. And, you know, we can dissolve our separateness also in the loving kindness context through loving kindness practice, where through love, we become bigger than the small self. So sensory clarity and metta really go together. They're both ways of dissolving our separateness. And so with mindfulness practice, we go inwards to see there's not an inner or an outer. We see that, oh, there's just sensations of this body arising in the space of sound, in the space of sight. There's not an inner and outer. There's location, but there's no inner and outer. And with metta, we go outward to see it's not separate from the inner, that other people's pain is our pain, other people's joy is our joy. So these are the two wings of the Dharma, mindfulness and metta. And there's a beautiful quote from Sri Nisargadatta summarizing this Indian wise person of the 20th century. He wrote, "Love tells me I'm everything. Wisdom tells me I'm nothing. Between the two, my life ceaselessly flows." So when we empty ourselves of self, we become everything. When we're everything, we empty the self. So what we learn through the wisdom of our practice is that everything is interdependent. There's no separation. If everything is interdependent, then everything is in relationship. I'm in relationship with the air. You're in relationship with the air, with the water, with the sky, the earth. We're all in relationship. And the Native Americans speak about all my relations when they speak about how they relate to the natural world. Your brain was wired in relationship. You grew up in deep relationship with your parents, siblings, if you have them. This brain is so wired by relationship that here's a story in the New York Times, 2009, titled, "What Are Friends For?" Last year, researchers studied 34 students at the University of Virginia, taking them to the base of a steep hill and fitting them with a weighted backpack. They were then asked to estimate the steepness of the hill. Some participants stood next to friends during the exercise, while others were alone. The students who stood with friends gave lower estimates of the steepness of the hill. And the longer the friends had known each other, the less steep the hill appeared. I just love that. Depending on how related we feel, a simple thing, a simple physical perception like the steepness of a hill changes. If we feel really related, it doesn't look so steep. If we feel alone, it looks really steep. And you know, we can write a country music song about it. That hill isn't so steep because I got you by my side. So what we can miss with Dharma practice is that we think of mindfulness and meditation as some solitary practice. Do you get that it's social time when you're mindful? Because mindfulness is using the social circuitry of the brain. The brain, the part of the brain where healthy attachment was created through your childhood, that's the part of the brain that is used in mindfulness. It's the relational part of the brain. So whether we're aware inwardly of sensation, thought, and image, that's relationship. If we're aware outwardly of sight or sound, that's relationship. It's all relationship. The interrelated web we live in is nothing but relationship. Imagine if our political world had this wisdom. We're in a world now where the stakes are so high and we have winners and losers. We don't have dialogue and relationship, people working to understand, people who don't look like them. That's relationship. If we really understood relationship, we would do our politics very differently. Our politics is about power over instead of relationship with. So to really get that everything we do is relationship changes how we interact with the world. We're always wanting, no matter what happens between us and others, we can tend to relationships. And relationships is where our heart lives. Our heartfulness is thrives on this sense of connection with yourself, with others, with the natural world. And so when we talk about relationship, what we're really talking about is making friends. We make friends with our experience, and we make friends with what's inside. We're very friendly to what's outside. And vice versa, if we learn to be friendly outside, we can turn the friendliness inside. We're always, the way we don't befriend our experience is wanting to be somewhere else, some other time. When we're practicing the relationship of mindfulness, what we're actually doing is making friends with ourselves and our experience right here and now. Mindfulness is befriending your experience. I like to say, you know, everything is arising to find a friend. Every, you know, irritation, every, you know, fear, every shame, every joy, every love, everything in your heart just wants a friend. And friend is this kind attention of mindfulness. But we're always trying to get somewhere else. And that's not friendly. That's not hospitable. That's being rude. to our guests, the guests of our experience. That's just saying, oh no, not you. I'm not letting you in. Friendliness is always about starting right here. There's a story. Zen master is on one side of the river and her student is on the other side. There's no bridges. There's no boat. And the student shouts across to her Zen teacher, how do I get to the other side? And the Zen master shouts back, you are on the other side. I love it. We're always trying to get somewhere else. We're already on the side we need to be on. And so we bring this sense of relationship to this moment. We make friends with our experience right here. Start right here, nowhere else, with yourself exactly as you are. This is how we make friends. And this is our good heart being hospitable to everything that comes through. Fear, joy, shame, impatience, patience. You know, just say yes. So relationships are complicated. Relating is complicated. There's a cartoon where two lovers are sitting on a couch, knee to knee, hand to hand, face to face, and one says to the other, I'll be right back. I'm going to blink. Now that's how we want to feel. We want to feel like sort of head over heels in love, like even blinking, you know, is like something you have to mention. A different cartoon shows often how our relationships are. A pair, and one is saying to the other, of course I care about how you imagined, I thought you perceived, I wanted you to feel. That's often more like it. Why are our intimate relationships so complicated? One reason is there's just so much in our hearts we don't want to feel. And we want to manipulate our partner in order to manage our own emotions. So we have an alternative. Instead of doing anything to change your partner, you could show up with a friendly attention to what's in your heart, that thing you don't want to feel. It's sacred to take that pause. For me, I know I'm feeling anxious if I'm trying to control Lisa. And instead of just blurting out something about what I think she should do, I could instead just notice what's happening inside. I'm scared. And this is where that friendly attention comes in. I can just turn towards the fear and I can accept it without believing it. And I can stay curious about it. As I've been saying all day, we can just show up for this moment. It's just like this. So bringing heartfulness into our practice means opening to all of this. We relate to our experience with wisdom, with compassion. And then we know how to relate to others. We know how to be simpler with our partner and not make so many demands. And when our practice, our heartfulness really ripens, we lose the sense of me. After a long retreat, I came home and was talking to my mother-in-law about the retreat. And I was really surprised to hear these words come out of my mouth. I said, "Well, Kirsten, I think I know what God is." She's like, "Oh, really? Wow. What is that?" I said, "The absence of Peter." That was my experience. Just without a me there, I'm so happy. It's such a relief. So sensory clarity, we can't try to force insights into our belonging, into our non-separateness. All we can do is try to bring sensory clarity into our practice. And then sensory clarity does the work for you. You'll have the insight, oh, there's just sensations, thoughts and images arising in space, in the space of sound, in the space of sight. So I'll just end with, I'm going to try to remember Rilke's great little words about non-separateness. I think I'm going to remember this. He said, the inner, what is it if not birds? Nope. I'm not going to. The inner, what is it if not intensified sky, hurled through with birds and deep with the winds of homecoming? Phew.